Welcome back as we go from our small intestine into our large intestine. So even though I said I welcomed you to the grand finale of digestion, I was referring to the action of the gut flora getting our nutrients into the blood. So when I say the grand finale of digestion, the main purpose of digestion is to break down the nutrients in our food so they can get into the blood. Leviticus 17:11 states that the life of the flesh is in the blood. And as you can see, it's quite a process that changes the food on our plate to microscopic little substances that get absorbed into our blood. So to make sure our blood is getting the nutrients it needs, we not only need to be eating nourishing food, organic if at all possible, but we also need to be mindful of what's happening in our gut so that it can be broken down to the substances that our blood needs. You can actually have someone that's not eating well, but they're such a happy fellow and they've never had antibiotics, they can be getting more nutrients into their body than someone who's eating organic, growing their own food, stressed out all the time and not realizing that the drinking of the meals is not good, and they've listened to what they are told when they're a diabetic. What are they told when they're a diabetic? Eat all day long. They can be getting less nutrients into their bloodstream. So it's not just the food, and the food is important, absolutely, but it's also digestion. And can you see that at different stages of the gastrointestinal tract and different problems that arise at different stages of the gastrointestinal tract, different herbs or treatments may be needed? So now we're getting into the large intestine or the colon, and we just looked at how one of the main functions of the colon is to take water out so that stools are formed. We also looked at the importance of fiber. Remember our three essential food groups: fiber, protein, and fats. And the fiber is necessary for two main reasons in the colon, and one is to stimulate peristalsis, so we've got movement through the colon. And the other is sweeping the colon. You see all these little corners and grooves in the colon. So that must be swept every day, and that's what fiber does. So the highest fiber foods are your vegetables, your fruits, and your legumes, or all plant foods, as long as it's not refined, is high in fiber. But what about if someone has irritation in their colon? And how would they know they have irritation in their colon? How they would know is the pain, cramping. Maybe there's so much irritation they're bleeding, and so bleeding from the colon. And maybe also their stools are like diarrhea. So the stools should be a mid-brown colour, and the stools should be a little bit formed, not to the point of hard. So if they have diarrhea, if it's totally liquid, there's something wrong. There's something wrong because it should not be. So that is a sign. And if they're going 10 times a day, that's another sign. And so I'm going to give you the story of a man who came to us, and he was from Kenya, is from Africa, and he and his wife had just moved to Australia, and he was going 10 times a day. He was on cortisone, and cortisone stops inflammation. He was on anti-inflammatories, and he came to our retreat. And the reason he came to our retreat is because his wife wanted him to come. She was worried about him. He was quite thin, even though he was eating a lot. What does that tell you? He's not getting the nutrients in. And when I looked at the situation, I immediately saw the problem. He doesn't drink alcohol. He doesn't drink coffee. He was a Seventh-day Adventist, but he eats a lot of bread. In fact, his wife said to me, he loves bread. So here we come to the five common allergens. Number one is dairy. She said he loves milk. Number two, he ate a lot of bread. There's the wheat. And often for breakfast, he likes to have oats. But he likes the quick oats. Do you know, the quick oats are not cooked. They're not cooked. The starch granules are still not broken down. He likes oats. Number four, and he often has lots of peanut butter on his bread. Peanuts. And she said, oh, he likes sugar. He likes candies. So unbeknownst to him, he was eating everything that was just feeding that inflammation. So at Misty Mountain Health Retreat, we don't serve any of that. And I cautioned him about having raw food, because if there's inflammation in the gut, the raw food can be a little harsh. And we started to give him Slippery-Om. We looked at Slippery-Om earlier in the week. Slippery-Om coats, soothes and heals the lining of the gut. Coats, soothes and heals. And do you remember we also suggested it for the lady who had the ulcerated esophagus? It's very soothing. And remember, it has a growth stimulant, which means it's going to stimulate rapid healing in those areas. The cells that line the gastrointestinal tract, they're remade every 3 to 5 days. So if you give it the right conditions, you should start to get responses quite quickly. Do you hear what I said? Not healing straight away, responses. What are the responses? This man had cramping, he had bleeding from the colon, and he had diarrhea 10 times a day. So they're the symptoms that we're going to calm down, yes?
About the oats, can the regular person eat them? I mean, are they...
Can a regular person eat them? Well, their body will quickly tell them. If their body's working perfectly well and they're eating oats, they're probably okay. Yeah.
What's about gluten-free oats?
No difference. Remember, the oats are very high in lectins. And do you remember the lectins? If the gut flora is not working well, the inflammation can get into the...
But if they're prepared in a better way...
If they're prepared in a better way, the gut flora is well, the person doesn't have any inflammation in their body, they possibly are okay. Remember, you watch for the response. The amount of people that tell me they have bloating all morning. What do they have for breakfast? Oats. Raw oats are indigestible. And how many people have a granola made with the raw oats? So what I say to people is, try this for breakfast for a week. See what happens. Bible says in 1 Thessalonians 5:21, prove all things. Hold fast to that which is good. My sons, my three sons, their favourite breakfast is oats. And they eat it every morning. And it works well with them. And you know what I say? Great. If it works well, do it. But at the health retreat, you will get a lot of people with compromised health conditions. And whenever you've got a state of irritable bowel, Crohn's disease, colitis, they are all inflammation of the last part. Could be some inflammation in the small and large. Now, do you remember the mix we looked at the other day? And I did it for this man because he was quite a severe case. So we called it gut repair. And this gut repair is very effective in any area in the gut. And when you're mixing it up in a jar, it's 8 parts Slippery-Om, one part myrrh. Does anyone remember the other part? Golden seal. King of tonics to all mucous membranes. So what we did with that, and how you mix this, is 1 teaspoon of the powder to, you can try it, maybe, you know, 3/4 cup of hot water. And mix it very well or it'll go lumpy. And what we did to this man, we gave it to him 4 times a day. We gave it to him in the morning. We gave it to him in the middle of the day. We gave him at night when we serve our guests broth and just before he went to bed. So the next day I said to him, how are things? Because with a Kenyan man, it's very private about this area of the body. So I, and as a woman, I wanted to respect his privacy there. So I said, how's everything going? And he'd say, good. Now, Monday, Tuesday at Misty Mountain Health Retreat are juicing days. And I wanted to keep a close eye on him. He was having the gut repair, and I thought the juices would be good because he would absorb a lot of nutrients, but I wanted to be sure that it didn't irritate. So when he had a big smile on his face and he said, good. And I also went a little bit further and said, how many times? He said, 4. And I could tell he wanted me to just leave it there, which I did. So Monday, Tuesday went very well. So Wednesday, I broached the subject a little bit more. And he was willing to talk to me a little bit more about these private areas because he was feeling so good. I said, are you having any cramping? He said, no. I said, are you losing any blood from the colon? No. I said, so how are things? He'd say, good. That's all he would say, good. So on Wednesday I said, how many times? 4. And then he'd walk away because that's all he wanted to talk about. And I respect that. That's all I needed to hear. So Thursday, see, he's had a day of eating Wednesday, so now we're up to Thursday. How are things? Good. This is all well? Yes. And at the end of Thursday, how many times? 3. Praise God. How quickly is that? So what we had to do, remember, in case of sickness, ascertain the cause. Did these foods cause it? Often it can be a whole lot of different things that may cause it. Sometimes it can be a side effect of some medication. Sometimes it can be big stress on top of not eating, you know, eating very bad food. It can be a whole lot of things, but that actually does feed it. So there are many people that eat these foods and they don't have irritable bowel and don't have Crohn's disease. But it, when a person's not well, they have to stop. And quite possible, after a year when everything's healed, he might be able to have a little peanut butter now and then. His body will quickly tell him. And if things start up again, what's his body saying? No, we'll go back to macadamia butter or cashew butter or, yeah, very quickly. So that's what you're teaching it. I find a very hard thing to teach people is to take responsibility and assess for themselves, because a lot of people aren't used to reading their bodies or listening to their bodies. That man went home a very happy man. Do you think he's going to go back to that? Do I have to tell him don't eat that? Do I have to tell him that? No. It's important to show respect, to show respect and give people the ability to work this out. And they will always ask you if they need to know. once the bleeding stops, once the cramping stops, once the stools start to be formed, that is his sign that he can start to reduce his medication. You see that? So cortisone, remember, prednisones, they have to be taken off very slowly. And that's what he started to do. And I think it's our responsibility to prove to our doctor that we can do it. Because every good doctor just wants you to be healed. And what you'll find is that when you say to them, I'm not bleeding anymore, I'm not cramping anymore, and my stools are formed, the doctor will say, well, I think we can start reducing your medication. Some people do it themselves, some people work with their doctors. It's whatever the person is comfortable to do. And we have seen that many, many times. I'll give you another story. We had a man attend our program, and this man was about 40. So this man that I'm telling you the story about, he was retired and he was probably 68, 69. I said, what is your reason for coming? Remember, I always ask, what is your reason for coming to our retreat? He said, I'm here because of my wife. Oh. So I did he did the health questionnaire and I noted that he was on medication. I said, what's your medication for? He said, I'm on cortisone and I'm on anti-inflammatories because, he said, my doctor says I've got irritable bowel. We've always called it Crohn's disease, but he said it's worse now. And he said, the doctor has just told me he can do no more for me. He was on about 15 milligrams of cortisone a day. I said, oh. I said, tell me what you eat. He said, well, at breakfast I have toast, margarine, because he's believed the information that margarine's better than butter. I think he thought he would really impress me. And he said, I have a cup of coffee. I said, mid-morning? He said, another cup of coffee, and I usually have a donut, cake or biscuit. And for lunch, he said, lunch I usually have sandwiches, ham and cheese, tomato and coffee. No comment. You know, many people lose it on their comments. Mm-hmm. And if someone says to me I have 25 cups of coffee a day, I go, and just write it down. You will lose them once you do the comments. Afternoon, cut another cup of coffee and a biscuit. What do you have at night? Usually steak. Sometimes I might have some broccoli, you know, whatever my wife cooks. In Australia, people eat meat and three veg. That's usually the evening meal. And he said, and I really like a couple of Jack Daniels after my cup of coffee. Do I have to tell him that diet's no good? Do I tell him, well, this is the cause of all your problems? He's just here for his wife. I said to him, can I try something? He said, sure. He said, the doctor's just given up on me. He's basically sent me home. I said, tell me about your usually morning habits. He said, well, I walk every morning and I walk along the coast because we are not far from the coast. And he said, no, I know where all the toilets are. Because in my half-hour walk every morning, I have to go four times. So he said, I've got this route that I can go. So he goes four times in the morning and another two times through the day. So what we did was now this man was used to sweet lolly things, and this golden seal is very bitter and the myrrh is very bitter. So I made a decision just to give him Cyprium. And we gave him Cyprium four times a day again. We gave it to him in the morning, we gave it to him in the middle of the day, about 6 o'clock at night, and then just before bed. Well, on Wednesday morning, this man came up to me beaming. I said, you've got some news for me. He said, I sure have. He said, I'm not bleeding from the colon anymore, and the cramps that I always get just before I go or when I'm on the toilet, he said, they've stopped. And he said, I'm eating today, so I'm still a bit liquid, but he said not near as bad because he just had 2 days on juices. But, you know, later in the week he said, oh, I've got form stools. He was a very happy man. On the last day, now this is Sunday, we always have breakfast with the guests on the last day, and the guests are just coming in from their morning walk. He ran up to me and he said, I just went on a walk and I haven't gone. Remember, he goes 4 times on his morning walk. Do I have to tell him to change his diet? No, just, and that's the beauty of the health retreat. People experience it. People see what to eat. Now, because he was going so well on the Thursday, he made a decision to stop his anti-inflammatories. And I said to him, it's great to try it here because we're here. So what would happen if he started going too much? Got a choice then. You can go back on maybe half-dose anti-inflammatories, or you just increase this. This can be taken hourly. But no reaction. So by the time he went home, he had reduced, I think he's dropped his cortisone by 5 milligrams. And he stopped all his anti-inflammatories. And what had his doctor told him? I can do no more for you. And yet this man hadn't even come to the health retreat for help. But I always ask permission, can I try something? I had one man, now he didn't want to try anything, thank you very much. But after the first, he was there because his wife wanted him to come, and she'd paid the whole amount before they came, so he had to come. We usually ask for a down payment of $500, and what that's done, it makes people come. Because you might have 6 rooms, you've got 6 people book in, and 2 don't turn up. You see, you've lost that. But if they have a, you know, I think, I'm not sure how much our guests pay now, but I know it was $2,500, I think it's $3,000 now for the week. So they... And we'll talk about this more, especially starting tomorrow and on Wednesday. We'll be going over starting the health retreat in more detail. But our rooms are state-of-the-art. They're like a fine hotel. So, you know, you can charge a lot when you've got that sort of accommodation. And so we find that when they pay the down payment, they come because we say it's non-refundable. It, you know, if something really bad happened, they can place it to another program, but that causes everyone to come. And then they pay the rest when they arrive. Well, this lady was very wise. She paid the whole amount for both of them 2 weeks before they came, so he had to come because she'd paid the money. So he was not interested. He said, I'm very happy with my medication, thank you. Mm-mm-mm. After the first lecture, he came straight up to me and he said, that makes sense. He said, I'm actually willing to let you try some things on me. So the Proverbs 14 verse 6, knowledge is easy to him that understands. And remember, the basis of freedom is the ability to choose. So you respect every decision. So I find that is incredibly effective. Now, as the stools start to form, as the medication's dropped, then it can ease back on the gut repair. Maybe just take it before breakfast and before at night. Now, if the stools start to go a bit more liquid, you just increase it again. I even had a man walking around with a jar of this in his hand. He was 35 and he'd had terrible irritable bowel for years. He just said, I'll love this. He said, I'll love this herb. Because of what it had done for him. Because the bleeding had stopped, the cramping had stopped. And just the simple herbs. So that's what you can do for irritable bowel, for Crohn's disease, for any irritation in the gut. Well, what about on the other hand, constipation? Dr. Kellogg said, one bowel movement a day is constipation. Now, if you say that to your guests, you might upset a few people. That's why I say, Dr. Kellogg said. And Dr. Kellogg wrote many books on the colon and digestion and hydrotherapy. In fact, he wrote a very interesting book called The Itinerary of a Breakfast. And in that book, he does what I'm doing now, although he doesn't do it in quite as much detail. So what do you do if a person's constipated? Number one, we have to go through those laws. So the eight laws. In fact, no matter what the problem, always the laws. And the reason why I always do the laws, because they are the true remedies. And if they're the true remedies, if that's what God said through the prophet, they are. So number one, for constipation, the eight laws. The eight laws of health. Sometimes I find that people have constipation purely because they're not drinking enough water. And show people how to drink water, little by little by little. And what I also find is that we get people that say, but I'm drinking enough water. So what I do then is I say to them, well, it's not the water. It must be something else. Maybe it's not enough fiber in the diet. And can you see with irritable bowel, you have to be careful with the fiber there. In fact, in severe cases of diarrhea, sometimes it's just vegetables and white rice. Remember, it's inflamed in there and the vegetables are the safest in there. It could be that they're not having the salt with their water. A lot of people we're going to look at that tomorrow in more detail. I'll give you the whole salt story tomorrow. And also, exercise, moving the colon. So the eight laws of health bring them to the colon. Also the dehydrators, coffee, alcohol, refined sugar, drugs, they are all dehydrate. How many people have had a hemorrhoid operation and they're in pain, so they take painkillers and then the painkillers dehydrate them, and the coffee lady comes around a couple of times a day in the hospitals. They've got special little tea ladies who are constantly supplying tea and coffee. So what's going to happen in here now with all that constipation and then the pressure? Ooh, it's not a happy place. And often with constipation, hemorrhoids are the result. So the eight laws of health, bringing in all of these, again, applying it specifically to the condition. Number two is position. So what do I mean by position? Well, when a person is sitting on the throne, here's the throne. They're sitting on the throne in the morning doing their daily evacuation. This little muscle, I've drawn it in red, it's called puborectalis. And it's designed to hold up the last part of the colon. And we're very glad for puborectalis, because if you need to go and you actually can't go right now because you're in a traffic jam or the plane's about to land, or aren't we glad that God has given us the ability to hold? But what happens when you feel to go, this area fills up, and if you don't go, it'll fall back. So how many people really feel to go, finally get to their destination, go and sit, and nothing happens? That's because it's gone back into here. And when it goes back into here, even more water can be taken out. So this is why number three, and I'll continue position in a minute, we should promptly answer nature's immediate call. Now, it's not the odd day you might not be able to go because you're in a traffic jam. So it's not the odd day you do it or the odd day you don't. It's your habitual daily tendency. So the colon can cope with you holding now and then, plane's about to land, you can't go. But many people use that ability to hold on every day. Every day. And that ends up putting a lot of pressure on this area. And yesterday we talked about constipation can be a factor in varicose veins, putting pressure on the lower parts. Puts a lot of pressure on here to the point something's got to give, and that person can have internal or external hemorrhoids, which are very painful. And so when a person sits on the throne, here we've got another throne, but in front of the throne is a little stool so that their knees are up in the air and they mimic the squatting position. What happens with the squatting position is that puborectalis relaxes. And when puborectalis relaxes, then the colon opens and the person can pass the contents with much greater ease. So basically it opens like this and the contents can pass with much greater ease. And it takes off all pressure on the anus. Now, if the person sitting here has just read of Dr. Kellogg saying three intakes of food a day should mean three evacuations, and they decide to help things along a bit with some pressure, that's the worst thing you can do. You never do that. Never do that. All it does is put pressure on there, weakens the opening to the point of hemorrhoids can, internal and external, can develop. So how do you get things moving? Well, the quickest way to get things moving if a person hasn't been for a couple of days is an enema. And all an enema is a cup and a half of water. You insert the tube and the water just goes in by gravity. When the water goes in, it mixes with the contents, softens it, and the person sits and goes. That's the quickest way to start things moving. When I was in Fiji a few years ago, the medical missionary I was working with took me to the local policeman who was in trouble. He hadn't been for 6 days. And it had happened to him about a month before, and they'd taken him to hospital. He says, I don't want to go to hospital. And so we gave him three enemas in a row. And a little bit came out. It was so impacted in there. So it was a little disappointing that we didn't get more of a result. If you're going to do three enemas, that really is done over about 3/4 of an hour, because you put the water in and then they massage it on their back, and then they go on the side massage, this side massaging it. And when he went, water came out in a few little lumps. And then same with the second and third. So what we did, and we don't always do this, but this man was happy to, and we were desperate. He was desperate. We gave him the salt water drink. So that's 2 litres. 1/3 seawater, and there's a lot of sea around Fiji. 1/3 cold water and 1/3 boiling water. And that makes a warm, salty mix. And we said, now drink it. And he was willing to do anything. So he drank it. We went and visited him that afternoon, and when he opened the door, we saw a man with a very big smile on his face. He said, "Whoa." He said, "I've had a big evacuation." Now, I think the seawater mix did it. Not everyone can handle that one, but it'll certainly move things along. And we're in Fiji and there was seawater there, and it did it. And also, I think the enemas had softened things and started things moving. Can you imagine how hard it is to move this when this has gone very, very hard? Because remember, one of the functions of the colon is to take water out. So in Australia, you can buy a stool that wraps around the toilet called Squatty Potty. You might be able to buy them here. I know you can. Good, yes. Good. I know in America and Australia. And they're becoming very popular. So anyone with any colon problems, it can be very beneficial. If someone has hemorrhoids, it's a contributing factor to healing the hemorrhoids because you're taking all pressure off the anus. And it can prevent hemorrhoids by doing your daily evacuation like that. Or you can just go to those. I know in Australia, I'm sure you've got them here. They're like dollar shops. They're like one's called Crazy Clark's, you know, cheap shops where everything in there's a dollar. But my friend says no one ever spends a dollar. Lots of little knickknacks. And often you can get little plastic stools for a couple of dollars. So, you know, that can certainly work. Also, the colon and the emotions are very closely connected. In the war, it was not unusual for a young man who was terrified to just dirty his pants. So the mind and the colon are very connected. So it's very important to relax. And this is where a merry heart doeth good like a medicine. But a broken spirit dries up the bones. I'd like to suggest the broken spirit can dry up the colon. So relax. So assess the stress levels. That's very important, to assess stress levels. We have a herb mix that we use to stimulate the colon. And we use it a lot at Misty Mountain because on the first 2 days at Misty Mountain, well, guests come in Sunday, they have a meal, and we found that that works so much better rather than going straight into fasting. They have a beautiful meal, then they can dream about it for 2 days. And we eat together, and then they start their fast. And because no fibre's coming, many colons stop. And so we give them a herb tea mix. We mentioned this the other day. I'll just recap on it. We call it colon tea. And we played around with many different mixtures, and we found that this one is excellent. It doesn't irritate the colon. It's one part cascara sagrada. And we have found that if it's just all cascara, it's incredibly bitter, almost impossible to drink, and it can cause cramping. So we do two parts licorice. And licorice is a calmer. And licorice is a slight thickness about it that can coat and soothe the gut, and three-part buckthorn. And buckthorn is a relative of the cascara. So we've got two barks and one root. And remember, with your barks and your roots, they need a gentle simmer. So rule of thumb, 1 teaspoon to 1 cup of water. And then there's a gentle simmer. So gentle simmer, not a mad boil, a gentle simmer with the lid on. And that gentle simmer is usually about 10 minutes. These are both bitter herbs. This is the bitterest, but there's only one part. This, of course, is sweet. And this one, it's not too bad. It's slightly bitter. But when we were playing around with the proportions, it was probably 18 years ago now when we had our health retreat in Victoria, down the bottom of Australia. We'd give it to all the staff to try out. And some of them, they could not drink it if it was too much cascara, so we tried this one. And I remember the laundry lady come in and said, that was a good one. And then the gardener came in and said, what was that? He said that had such a good effect. And we find that what it does is people just go like they usually go, which is once or twice a day while they're on the fast. If a person usually goes four times a day, we definitely don't give it to them. So that's why I always ask in the health questionnaire, how many bowel movements do you average a day? And I always write that down. And if someone is only going once a week, they might need 3 cups of this a day. If someone's going once a day, we find about 1/2 cup every evening is just right. So you feel your way with it. You're definitely looking for the response to know how much the next night. So Monday night, the guests usually are asked by the staff, just personally, because it's a very private thing, do you need Colin tea tonight? And they might say, well, I don't know. And then the staff might say, well, have you been today? Yes, I did go once. And then the staff might say, well, I suggest that you have another 1/2 cup because you're not having any fibre. And if you had 1/2 cup last night and went once today, that's what the tea's doing for you. Some people don't need it. So you feel your way with that. And if very occasionally we assess wrong and someone starts going 10 times, then we quickly come in with the slippery on. And if one dose doesn't do it, we give another dose in 1/2 hour, then we give another dose. Yes?
I saw in the notes that you had mentioned castor oil for constipation earlier.
That's
how,
right.
How was it that worked?
That's right. So we'll look at a few other things that you can do for constipation. The castor oil pack on the abdomen, that can help with constipation, but it also can help with irritable bowel. Remember what the castor oil does. It penetrates very deep, and wherever it penetrates, it breaks up lumps, bumps, congestion, adhesion. It cleanses the area. And so if someone has constipation, that sometimes is enough to start moving things along. If someone has irritable bowel, it can help to cleanse and soothe the area from the outside. And remember, the castor oil compress is not absorbing anything out of you. So it doesn't have to be discarded. It's just a vehicle to hold the oil to go into you. And it penetrates deeper than any other oil. So no matter what the problem, whether it's constipation or diarrhea, the castor oil compress can be very helpful. I do never suggest that it's taken by mouth. It can be quite irritating in the gut. But an old remedy in Australia was to take it by mouth. And another, I think this is a bit of an old wives' tale, but they say if a woman's late in pregnancy, you know, she was due 2 weeks ago and she still hasn't gone into labour, to take castor oil, but I've never known anyone that it started labour with. So how often would they wear it? Overnight, if they don't want to wear it overnight, they could just slip it down their clothes through the day. Their clothes can hold it in place. At least 5 hours a day. Might have a break of a couple of days every week. Leave it up to the person. And every time they apply it, the castor oil compress, they might need to put a little bit more oil on. They get to know if you're starting to feel dry. And the other is the sitz baths. Remember we talked about this when we talked about hydrotherapy? That's not always possible. It's a little bit hard if a person is large, but if a person is slender and can find a bath that they can fit in, and that's 3 minutes hot, 30 seconds cold, 3 times, that can certainly help as well. So we find that people respond very quickly when the laws are implemented, the herbs are taken, the compress and the sitz baths, they They respond very quickly.
So you would use castor oil also for irritable bowel syndrome?
That's right, yeah. We had a guest, she said to me, my husband's a doctor. I was diagnosed with irritable bowel. I did not like what he was suggesting. So she said, I heard about castor oil compresses and I just wore castor oil compresses every day. And she said, I conquered my irritable bowel with the castor oil compresses. I thought that was a good story. What about hemorrhoids? The big H. The sitz baths, very good for that. And I'm going to give you a couple of recipes for suppositories. That you can make that can be very helpful. One is you can, if you've got aloe vera, you can cut a strip of aloe vera about the size of your little finger and freeze it. So we have little containers in our freezer of these frozen suppositories. The cold can be very, very nice on the hemorrhoids, causing them to shrink up a little bit, and the aloe vera coats and soothes the whole area. So one suppository is aloe vera. Now, if you can only buy aloe vera juice, you can blend a suppository together. You can make one by the aloe juice and slippery elm. And you can imagine that as it melts, that's very soothing for the area. So if they put it in, insert it in before they go to sleep at night, and it will be very uncomfortable if they don't insert it high enough. So when they insert it, you want them to insert it till their finger is right in, so that it's right inside. If it's just at the opening, that would be very uncomfortable. So you can blend these two together. And what we usually do, so that'll be a little bit liquidy. Mind you, the slippery elm will put a little bit of form to it. We get a glove, a surgical glove, and we pour it into the fingers of the surgical glove. And we tie off the tops of the surgical gloves. You know, in most freezers you've got like wire trays. We just sort of sit it in there so they're hanging like that as they freeze. Once they're frozen, then you can cut them and you can store them into a little container. And the third one is just castor oil. And to do castor oil, you soften a cotton wool. And you soften cotton wool with castor oil and you mold it to the shape of your little finger. And you put it in the freezer. And I'm just warning you, it takes 3 days to freeze. The castor oil compress takes 3 days to freeze. But obviously they all have to be frozen to be able to insert them in. So they can all be very helpful in the area of hemorrhoids. Again, position's important, so making sure they have their knees up, making sure they're having a nice fibrous diet. It's not uncommon for people to develop hemorrhoids as a result of constipation, so you check that the bowels are moving regularly as well. So at Misty Mountain Health Retreat, our fridge and freezer in our health centre has quite a nice little collection of frozen suppositories. And what we do is we just give them to the people. Well, we basically say they're there, so if you want to use them. And we had a lady recently who had cancer in the last part of her colon, and we said to try it, and she said it brought her so much relief. We knew that the suppository could go in because, you know, she was having bowel movements, which means there was an opening that it was coming out. So, because what they had said to her, they wanted to cut out the whole of the last colon and just give her a colostomy bag. So she decided not to do that and come to our retreat. I can't tell you the end of the story because I don't know. That was only probably about 3 months before I left home, yes?
What does it look like for a person who has, I'm not sure, is it part of the stomach or the colon where people do surgery and who are overweight and they want to lose weight?
Yeah. What they do with that is they staple off part of the stomach. So they've only got a very small stomach. So they can only eat a tiny little bit.
And how does that function with the hydrofluoric acid?
It's very hard. It's very hard. In fact, one lady we know, she'd had it done and she got to the point where everything just came up. And she could only have a few mouthfuls at a time. She lost weight purely because food wasn't going in. And then and she's very, very large. And then she went on a cruise and she ate a lot of chocolates and put all the weight back on. She could only eat little bits. Very sad story because that lady had a heart attack and died about a year after that. She just couldn't stop eating. So that's really going to the mind, and she was a Seventh-day Adventist. Trusting God with our life and our health and be willing to give up everything for Him. He gave up everything for us. But you must be tender, always be tender with people like that. But unfortunately, she had her family, you know, took her on the cruise and said, oh, it won't hurt. Then bring a little bit of joy into your life and have the chocolates. Unfortunately, that's what happened. And so I think we've just about come to the end of our journey through our gastrointestinal tract. Yes?
I have a question. What is antibiotics doing to your gut?
What antibiotic does to the gut is it kills off this flora. It kills off the healthy flora. And when the healthy flora is killed off, there's your Lactobacillus acidophilus, because it's antibacterial, so it's killing your bacteria. It allows candida yeast to get out of control. And of course, antibiotics are also made from a mold waste. It's not uncommon for people after antibiotics to get thrush, which are like a fungal things, vaginal thrush, jock itch, tinea between the toes, things like that. That's not uncommon. So when someone does have an antibiotic, then it's important to come in with some cultured foods. It's where the sauerkraut's really good. Yogurt's really good. You can make yogurt out of coconut milk, soy milks. And you might have heard of prebiotics. They talk about you must take prebiotics as well as probiotics. Well, all prebiotic is vegetable fiber. So when someone has the yeast presence from the antibiotics, then the antifungal type foods, getting the sweets right down, lots of vegetables. Lots of vegetables, yeah?
And how does the process of the probiotics or the culture that we have in the food when we're making cultured foods, how does that process compare to the bacteria doing what it, is it similar in the gut?
Yeah, because it's lactobacillus in here and it's lactobacillus that works in your cultured foods.
Is it like pretty much the same,
yeah,
the process in the gut and in the food?
Yeah, it is. Yeah?
So you're saying that the imbalance of the bacteria I can alone change through the food?
The imbalance can be changed through the foods, especially if there's cultured foods and especially if it's a high vegetable diet. And you might remember when I talked about aloe vera that that's got natural probiotics in it as well. So having the aloe vera drink and having the prebiotic in your vegetable, but also you might need herbs to kill off the excess yeast. So that can be garlic, that can be oregano essential oil, it can be olive leaf extract. So you're coming in with all of that.
And that would close as well my leaky gut syndrome, if somebody has a leaky gut syndrome.
Yeah, yeah. And, of course, what can also come in is your aloe or your slippery elm to help coat and soothe and help to heal that.
If a doctor prescribes antibiotics and you have to take them, is it risky not to take them and to take something else? Let's see, garlic in higher...
Well, it depends. It depends why, what the problem is. But if you have a problem and you're not going to take the antibiotics, you must take something.
Yeah, and what could you take?
Garlic.
Yeah. And how can you count the amount?
Well, garlic four times a day, four raw cloves a day will equal, you know, the antibiotics that you would take in that day. Okay. Not everyone can handle raw garlic. So what you can do is have a bowl of hot soup and crush the raw garlic into the hot soup, and that can often just take the edge off so that people can eat it. But if they can't take raw garlic, they can take olive leaf extract. But that, again, needs to be taken three or four times a day.
Mm. Is there a specific reason why they cannot handle raw garlic?
It's because it's high sulfur. And usually if there's any irritation in the gut, it will irritate it. I was looking at a study. I saw this in the newspaper. 100 people had the flu. 50 took antibiotics and 50 didn't, and they all got better. Did you hear that?
Yeah.
They all got better. And that wasn't even considering people who are doing everything right. Because the body can heal itself.
What would you recommend for tick bites?
For tick bites, charcoal. Charcoal absorbs and neutralizes poisons. Mm-hmm. So for the tick bite, the charcoal should go on immediately. Yes?
And if you're getting more red and the tick bite has, you've got some kind of inflammation, what do you do that? Garlic?
Just charcoal. Charcoal will absorb it and neutralize it. And if it's getting really inflamed, you could slow that down with ice or cold cloths and then put another charcoal on. Yeah?
I've heard people express that they're easier with eating white rice than brown rice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is that because they have inflammation?
Quite possibly so. Often when brown rice is served, it's not cooked enough. Because if I say to people, what about brown rice? They say, I don't like brown rice, it's too chewy. I say, it hasn't been cooked enough. But if you boil brown rice for an hour, it'll just go very, gluggy, soggy. Mm-hmm. So remember what I said, you cook it till all the moisture's gone, keep the lid on and leave it there with the stove off, and it'll cook another half hour just in the heat of the saucepan. Any more questions before we sign off? Yes?
I have two more.
Yeah?
We were talking about menu planning yesterday.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering if you put aside the diabetes and the cancer and the sugar intolerance, mm-hmm. and the fruit, Anna White talks about this cleanse for people who are overworking the brain, doing a lot of brain work, of a fruit cleanse.
Yes.
You've never done that in your center?
No, we have never done that. Because the majority of people that come to our retreat either are overweight or diabetic or have a yeast presence. And I think the yeast presence is so much more today because there really is an overuse of antibiotics. Mm. And I was in a doctor's surgery about 3 years ago because my ears got blocked up because I was duck diving in the sea in Fiji and I wanted the doctor to look in. And there on the counter was, you know, we, the World Health Organization's biggest health risk today is overuse of antibiotics. Because what's happening is people are having so many antibiotics that when it comes time that maybe they have a very serious infection, it's not doing it. I believe antibiotics should be kept as life-saving. And when you nip things in the bud, you know, I told you that saying we have, deal with it as soon as it happens, it stops it developing really bad. So, you know, there's a lot of antibiotic use, which is putting yeast into people. Yes?
There's research that refers to, I think it's 5% of, it was an American population that's somehow, because of genes, good genes, they can do anything, eat anything, and they have no health problems. And they live a long time. It's like research shows this. Have you seen this or have you?
I have seen it. We had a guy do our program who, he laughed a lot. He was a chronic smoker and there was no real health problems. But he got to 50 and he realised he couldn't do it much longer. And that's what I said to him. Your mother must have done everything right. I think you've got strong genes, but it still is having an effect. And he laughed. And he threw his cigarettes in the fire. But I think, yeah, he had strong genes, but you cannot damage the body and have no effect. You know, that defies reason. So they might, and how many people do you meet that have got away with a terrible lifestyle for 40 years and then it starts to catch up on them? It does, you know, you can't keep hitting a tree and not sustain some damage. It's the same with the body. Yes?
I'm mentioning again the topic about candida. So you say in candida you see when they have a thrush. But not every time somebody has a candida intestinal, he will gonna have a thrush outside, or?
That's right, that's right.
How do you know that he has a candida?
Usually the tongue's the best guide. And remember, there are dozens of different species of candida. And candida is a naturally occurring yeast in our gut. But if our lactobacillus acidophilus and all the other great bacteria that come from that are in the right amounts, candida is under control. But when it's killed off with the antibiotics or the refined sugars or the stresses or other drugs, that's when they can get out of control. So there can be slightly different species and they can manifest themselves in different ways in different bodies. So the tongue is a good guide. And the tongue should be pink from the tip to the back. If you can scrape off the white, it's waste. But if those fungus buds, which is what the white at the back of the tongue is, if they are there, that's a sign there is yeast in the body.
So you see that often on the tongue?
Yeah.
Is it not also skin problems?
It can be skin problems, that's right. It can be skin, it can be thrush, it can be sinus, you know, you can have 10 people with a yeast problem and there can be different manifestations.
Because I tested in the stool and it's not that often. I mean, I look at the tongue and I don't see that often on the tongue. And in the stool, it's not often. One patient, for example, I thought he's going to have candida, but in the stool, it didn't show up.
And sometimes it can. Then you get some people that don't fit the bill at all. I don't know if you got that saying, fit the bill or fit the... It's just so different.
And it just comes to my mind, this person has a histamine intolerance, I think he has a lactose intolerance and a fructose intolerance, so what do I do with this person?
We stop the fruit and the and the gluten and the dairy and then make a very simple food and little by little build up that gut. Build up the gut. Hippocrates said all disease begins in the gut.
Yeah. You mentioned the five allergens, dairy, wheat and so on. Are they allergens not only for the gut, but allergens also for other...
For the whole of the body. If someone has a candida problem or yeast problem, we stop that. If someone has a skin problem, we stop that. If someone has an irritable bowel, we stop that.
Yeah.
We find them common. But remember, it can take 2 months to see the full effect once they're stopped.
Allergies as well, or included
pollen? Yeah. We had one very sad story of a man who had a bee allergy, and he had his pen there, so his EpiPen that he would... But he did not want to change his diet, did not want to do any of that, and his family found him dead on the floor reaching for his pen. And his son, he was in his late 50s, his son saw this and came to me and he said, I don't want that. So he stopped all of this and his allergies went. He had no more allergy. So I find that when someone has a pollen allergy and they stop that, they don't have a pollen allergy anymore. I find if they have an allergy to cats and they stop all that, they can conquer their cat allergy. Horse allergy, they stop all that, then they stop their horse allergy. Yeah. So it's worth trying. In fact, it would be worth all of you students to try that. 2 months. See how you feel. And then after 2 months, have some porridge for breakfast. See if there's a reaction. If there's no reaction, you're probably okay. Okay, I think we'll close. Time to close. Father in heaven, thank you so much for our gastrointestinal tract. Thank you for its intricacies and thank you for the incredible way it works. And we pray now that you give us wisdom and understanding as we take this information in, and we pray it in Jesus' name. Amen.